Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 16th episode of MTG Fast Finance, the podcast that makes you regret not updating your card prices. MTG Fast Finance is your weekly podcast covering the world of Magic the Gathering, finance, collection management, and speculation. I'm your host, James Chilcott, a.k.a. MTG Critic on the interwebs. My co-host is Travis Allen, a.k.a. Wizard Bumpin', and we're here to help you guys make and save money playing our favorite game, Magic the Gathering.
Hey, lovely Saturday afternoon today. Glad to be here and talking some Magic Finance with everybody. Our show is sponsored by MTGPrice.com, the leading MTG Finance community. Sign up today at MTGPrice.com to manage your collection, track your specs, and read articles by some of the best financial minds in the hobby.
Travis, why don't you tell the beautiful people what we've got on deck today?
Sure. This afternoon, we've got three segments. Our first segment is Top Movers. This is where we will look at the cards that have seen the largest price increases over the last week and discuss how they got there. Segment two is where we'll talk about cards to watch. These are the cards that James and I have our eyes on as providing opportunities to make you guys some money. And segment three will be our Metagame Weekend Review. This week we'll be discussing Grand Prix Toronto last weekend and a little bit of Grand Prix Tokyo that's running right now. So let's go ahead and jump right in on segment one, the top movers. Right at the bottom, do you want to kick us off this week, James?
Sure. Our first top mover of the week is City of Brass. This is the original printing from Arabian Nights way back in 1994. Started the week around $74 for near mint copies, finishing about $107 for a change of $33 or plus 45%. Nothing much to see here, folks. This is just an original printing that is popular in old school Magic, a format that continues to gain reasonable momentum. And as a card, an original printing of a relatively famous card from that period of time, it's no big surprise that copies have finally been cornered and hunted down to near extinction.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's a familiar story we've heard here, and also a similar story on our next card, which is Lake of the Dead from Alliances. This started the week at $5.50 and is now at $8. That's about a 45-50% increase, which is not the largest that we've had on here in a while, but it's been kind of a quiet week, and we probably haven't seen the end of this. Lake of the Dead is a reserved list card that allows you to sacrifice a swamp for 4 black mana. So, pretty powerful effect. I would not be surprised to see this show up daily as we go forward in some of these price watch websites like on MTG Price. And this could end up at $15 or even $20 given that it's on the reprint or on the reserve list. But where we are right now is because of very low near mint supply.
Yeah, I mean, the lowest price copy on TCG Player in near mint condition is about $10 with $3 shipping. So we're talking a couple of copies around $13, and then the next ones are over $20 already. So, I wouldn't be surprised to see this settle somewhere in the high teens as people start to pull copies out of binders.
Yep.
So next on our list, we have the foil editions of the M12 printing of Quicksilver Amulet. This is an artifact for 4 mana that allows you to tap and pay another 4 mana to put any creature from your hand into play. I have seen this floating around in Fringe decks in Modern for a while. Most recently, it's been seen in Mardu Goryeo's Vengeance decks, where players are using it to put Grizzlebrand and or Emrakul into play, usually out of the sideboard, but occasionally with main deck copies. It's also got casual chops, and it's interesting in EDH. The foils moved from 13 to 25 this week for almost a 92% gain. Stock is relatively low, so probably a decent chance this continues some slight upward momentum, but don't be scared to get out of this card if you've been randomly holding some in a binder.
I agree, and I will point out that the Urza's Legacy copy, I'm looking at TCG Player, there is maybe 3 to 4 playsets in near mint copies, and then foils, there's one near mint foil at $20 and change. So even though we've got the M12 one on here, I think they both probably have seen a little action lately.
Yeah, it's also worth noticing that MTG Price staffer Douglas Johnson is over at GP New York City this weekend, and he had posted a picture to Twitter yesterday where the Channel Fireball hot list included regular copies of Quicksilver Amulet being bought up by the prominent retailer at $8 US. So clearly they believe that even the regular copies are going to be displaying some upward momentum. And looking at the available inventory for, you know, near mint M12 copies, it would seem that they're probably correct and that this will settle in the mid to high teens when all is said and done.
Yep. Seeing it on the buy list on the floor like that is pretty telling. James, you've watched this next card on stream a little bit with Jeff Hoogland, so why don't you tell us about this one?
Sure. So last week, folks, one of my picks of the week was Nahiri when she was sitting at around $10 or $11, and I called it to hit 20. And sure enough, here we are next week with Nahiri sitting in the number 3 slot for the week. Having done exactly that, she moved from $11 to 20 over the course of the week, picking up an 80% gain. It's a combination of elements in play. She's seeing increased standard play as people realize that she's actually much more powerful than originally anticipated. She's also been featured multiple times on prominent Star City Games circuit competitor Jeff Hoogland's daily modern streams, where he's been playing Nahiri, I believe, as a 2 or 3 of in his Kikikor deck, using her to occasionally hide behind the plethora of creatures that Kikikor tends to field and get her up high enough that he can pull a single copy of Emrakul out of his deck and onto the battlefield. She's also just good for cycling through the deck and finding the cards you need. If Nahiri is indeed a modern playable card and is likely to become a staple planeswalker in that format, then her movement makes a lot of sense. The foils also jumps considerably this week, moving from $30 to $55, which is certainly pricing those foils for success in Modern as a format. So a card that if you got in last week when we told you to, feel free to get out of your regular copies now. That's a great gain that gives you profitable tradeouts. And if you believe in her in Modern, then maybe you want to consider getting out of those foils, just because even if you think that she's going to hold her position in that format, being priced over $50 means you can probably get out now and get back in on some copies further down the road when the summer lulls set in.
Yeah, I'm already seeing prices start to come down on this from where it was even just 24 to 48 hours ago. So I like selling out of both of these here and then coming back around to it probably in like mid-August or something like that.
Yep, I could see that happening.
I'll take the next one. That's Part of the Water Veil from Battle for Zendikar. That is the blue time walk effect that can awaken your land into a 6/6, I think. I started the week at about $2, and we are now seeing it over $5 for almost a 200% increase. This showed up because it was part of a blue-green ramp deck over in Japan. I got wind of this about a week ago from some of the other MTG Price writers who had picked up on it and had run it to great success in their local metagames. I guess it was doing quite well here and abroad. I'll be curious to see if it shows up at New York. You know, it looks like just a pile of ramp and some Part of the Water Veils and a few of some Ulamogs type of thing. So it looks exactly like the type of deck I would want to be playing. But again, prices have already begun to restrict a little bit after the initial jump. So I'd be getting out of these right now if you haven't already, because the chances are that this becomes a major tier one deck is a lot slimmer than the price slinking back down towards $2 or $3.
Sure, and also of note, this was one of our picks from show number 7, where we called it at $2 to hit $6 to $8. So folks, just, you know, keep listening to those picks and figure out which ones make the most sense to you, because we're here to make you money and it's working.
We really got to get one of those bells, one of those sound effect bells.
Yep, we're gonna work on that, folks. So final pick of the week, final top mover of the week is Brain in a Jar. Has moved from $1 to $3, $2 gain for a 200% increase. Saffron, Olive, and others have been using Brain in a Jar to do all sorts of funny, funky things that are unlikely to be top tier competitive so far. But there's also the fact that Brain in a Jar unlocks potential with cards like Beck and Call, cards that can be fused. You can actually cast the alternate side of the card which does give Brain in the Jar at least some long-term casual potential as having a very unique effect interacting with those cards. And, you know, it's possible that, if that somebody figures out the right deck list, it could make an appearance on the fringes of Modern.
Yeah, I was very reluctant to see this do anything. I just thought it was cute. The wording on it was tough because it was really difficult to cheat the trigger. But I saw a list pop up recently that was using it to cast the Fuse spell, because you could cast it like on 2/4 something like Breaking, and I think you were able to fuse it and cast Breaking and Entering, I think was the trick with it, which is where it needs to be for it to be an amusing Modern deck. You need to be able to do something like that. So, again, we're going to see the slope back down towards $1, but this is always going to be kind of out on the fringes as a curious deck. And then maybe someday down the road they'll print something and suddenly this card will skyrocket.
Yeah, if you got in on these at $1, trade them out on Puka Trade at $3, there will be sustained long-term demand on the card. Over time, if you want to hold it for longer looking for greater gains, I could see this easily being a $5 or $6 card a couple of years down the road.
Cards like Brain in a Jar are something where I'm usually less interested in this card in the engine, but when people start to figure out what it works with, I will start watching those decks and look for the cards in those lists that are underpriced, because then the recently printed artifact moves from $1 to $3, but the like a Kamigawa rare that's part of the combo goes from 50 cents to $9 or $10. So those are the cards to look for, sort of the accompanying pieces, I think.
Yeah, that's a very solid point. And I think both of us are holding many copies of Beck and Call, so hopefully they figure it out with that card in the list.
Oh, God, please. All right, let's move on. There was a short week for Spikes, not a lot going on, so we are going to move on over to segment 2, our cards to watch. Looks like you've once again brought quite a few options to the table, James, so I am going to let you get started.
Yeah, this week I'm digging pretty deep on cards that are being suppressed from Battle for Zendikar, based on, high volumes of that set being popped, and many of the best cards in the current standard metagame already commanding, high price tags. Some of the other unheralded long-term casual cards are at or near lows that I think are pretty appealing. So my first pick of the week is Zada Hedron Grinder, with a timeline of long-term, so at least a couple of years out, confidence level of 7. You can currently pick up this Legendary Goblin at 50 cents. I would see this being a $3 to $5 card down the road. He's got a very splashy, very fun effect in casual. If you're not familiar with the card, he basically takes any spell that is targeting one of your creatures and duplicates it for every creature you control. So if you target your creature with, say, a 1-mana instant that gives a creature +1/+0 and draws a card, then multiple copies of that go on the stack. So it plays especially nicely with effects that either pump your team or protect your team or are cantrips. And he's a fun card in EDH and Commander circles, definitely a kitchen table all-star, and unlikely to see any kind of a reprint in the next few years. So this is the kind of rare that I'm happy to stock away 100 of at 50 cents and never look back.
Now, this is the type of card, and I'm curious to see if you agree with me here, but casual cards, I feel like, come in two stripes. There's sort of your EDH card, and then there's your 60-card casual card. So a card like Gitrog Monster, to me, stands out much more as an EDH-type card, where your foils are going to be very valuable relative to non-foils. But Zada strikes me more as a kitchen table card, something players are going to put 4 of in their unsleeved deck. So you're better off buying the non-foils on Zada than the foils because of the type of casual players that like it. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And one of the reasons that he makes this list is that when he's played, he's going to, in a 60-card casual deck, he's going to be played as a 4 of, because assumably he is a build-around card. He's an engine. And you're going to build the whole deck around him. You're going to put some artifacts in there to protect him. You know, your Swift Boots, Swiftfoot Boots, or some equipment that's going to help him stay on the board. It's going to be the dirtily casual goodness that you would expect. So on that basis, he's very unlikely to ever get much below 50 cents. I mean, you could see some copies that's somewhere as low as 25, I'm sure, and at which point, you know, even better to snap those up.
Okay.
So let's go from a long shot casual target to a modern staple. Tell me about your next pick.
My next pick is Cryptic Command. I've got this on a mid to long timeline, the conference level, like a six to a seven. Copies are available out there right now for around $20, although I just checked TCG Player and it looks like you're probably in the 21, 22, 23 range. I like this up to about 35, which would be about a $15 increase. You know, it's Cryptic Command. This card used to be like $50 or $60 back before it was reprinted. We have since seen Cryptic Command and blue decks in general sort of fade away since Splinter Twin was banned and the Eldrazi rose up in power. And that all sort of happened during the time period where Modern Masters and Modern Masters 2 cards were sort of suppressing the value on cards like this. We have not had a format ripe for increases with blue cards and something like Cryptic Command. Now that the Eldrazi is gone, and we're starting to finally get away from these older printings, the prices can finally start to move, which we've seen on other cards from these sets. We also have the fact that Ancestral Vision was just unbanned, along with Sword of the Meek, which are both very blue cards. Ancestral Vision most assuredly is. So even though we're not seeing a ton of it right now, I don't think it's long before that eventually gets to the forefront of the format again. And given that this card used to be $50 to $60, I don't think it's a stretch at all to see this well over $30 and possibly even into $40.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. I think it's a slow, steady gainer heading into Modern Masters 2017, at which point, if they reprint it yet again, it's going to get knocked back down and might sit there for quite a long time. If it's not reprinted for the third go-around in that set, then I think at that point it has a very strong chance of popping up into the zone that you've got targeted.
What have you got next for us, James?
So another rare that's been fooled around with in Standard throughout the season but has never really gotten anywhere. It was cut from the green-black Aristocrats deck by the Channel Fireball team on the basis that it wasn't good enough. But has all sorts of casual implications long-term, is Smothering Abomination. This is the 4-3 flyer for 4 that forces you to sack a creature every turn, but every time you sack a creature, you draw a card. Another build-around engine-type card, it can be had for as low as 25 cents right now. Easily, this card hits $2 to $3 long-term, and I think you're going to see some very nice trade-out gains down the road. You'll be able to dump it on Puka Trade in a couple of years and thank me for getting you in this low.
You know, this is curious. I'm looking on TCG Player right now, and I see that there are plenty of foil copies at like $1.50 or so, but the promo copy, there's like 3, and they're $10. I wonder what's going on there.
Yeah, no idea. All I know is that I have, in fact, tested this card in Standard, and while it didn't quite fit in the green-black Aristocrats deck, because they just wanted to move faster and do other things, they were looking to flood and already had plenty of sources of card advantage. This is the kind of engine, like Zada, that when you're going to run it, you're going to run multiple copies. Right now, there's a flood of available copies, but you get into that attrition matrix a few years down the road where most of that stuff is floated under beds and into binders and boxes and closets, and you know, casual people are picking them up one or two at a time at your local store, and all of a sudden the vendor wakes up one morning and realizes they've got to put it on the buy list.
Can you imagine if they reprinted Frexian Altar and Standard or something like that? Suddenly this card would be off to the races.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a few more sets before it rotates out, so who knows? We'll see. It's still a 4-3 flyer for 4 with upside. It has a long shot chance in Standard, assuming something gets printed alongside it, or the aristocrat style decks are looking for something to go over the top. But yeah, as a casual card, it's plenty safe at 25 cents.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to miss when you're paying that cheap for these cards. All right, speaking of mid-range flyers, my next card is Revelark?
Yeah, I like whatever. Revelark.
You like, yeah, I mean, I usually say Revelark, but I always wonder. I've got this also at a mid to long time frame, although really it can probably be short, honestly. My confidence level on this is 7. I'm looking specifically at the Modern Masters copies, but the Shadowmoor, Eventide, whichever copies are also an option if you can find them. But I'm looking at foils on this guy, and the Modern Master foils are in extremely low supply as far as I can tell. They're around $17 at the moment. Probably between 17 and 20. I don't think it's a stretch at all for this somebody to pick up the last maybe 5 to 10 copies that I can find, and suddenly this is a $30 foil. This is in every white deck in EDH ever made, and everybody wants their foil copy. So, you know, this is a card that's probably going to be tough to just buy into. I don't know if it's worth throwing cash at, but I would be trying to scoop these out of binders everywhere I could find them over the next week or two until we talk about this in segment one in a month.
Yeah, I mean, the combination of play in multiple formats, the sheer power level of the card, the combo-tastic recursive nature, I mean, all of this screams kind of card that pops out of binders at local stores on a regular basis. So, yeah, I think that's a great pickup.
Okay, so your next one is a curious one. Why don't you tell us about that?
Sure. So, I mean, one of the things I've been looking at is trying to figure out Eldrazi that have been undervalued haven't found any kind of a home. One of the cards that I fooled around with a lot in fall that has now fallen to extreme lows is Sire of Stagnation. This is the 5/7 for 4 blue-black. Eldrazi that reads that whenever your opponent puts a land into play, you draw 2 cards. So obviously, that's a strong disincentive in Commander and EDH for anybody to be playing lands, puts a huge target on the creature's head, and it has the kind of effect that will take over games in a hurry if people can't deal with it. It's a mythic, and it's fallen to $1. I could see it easily being a $3 or $4 card down the road as casuals fool around with it. And on that basis alone, I'm comfortable picking up 10 or 20 copies at that price.
Yeah, I got to say, I'm not really wild about this card, at least back when it was initially spoiled. It just sort of felt like a bad Consecrated Sphinx. But at the same time, at under $1, it seems so much safer than it did at the $2 or $3 when I was looking at it before. So I am definitely on board with this because the risk is so extremely low.
Yeah, I mean, these are all cards that, you know, if you grab a few playsets to drop in the decks here and there and forget about them for a few years, you'll probably be pleasantly surprised once you catch them on a gains list somewhere down the road.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great, Sire of Stagnation, and you've been busy this week, so what's your next one?
So another BFC mythic, this one with a stronger pedigree in the casual circles, is Dragon Master Outcast, which was a regular component in the Jeskai Black decks heading out of the fall. It was a mythic from the original Zendikar block that got reprinted in BFC, and before the reprinting, it had peaked as high as $15 or $16 U.S., It fell fast and hard down under 10 and has stumbled all the way down to $3. But this kind of mythic, first of all, it makes dragons, and that's really all you need to know to believe that casuals will find a use for it in decks down the road. And at $3, I'm lukewarm on the card. I'd love to see it get down to $2. If I can find copies in that range, that's a snap buy. There were some copies and binders at GP Toronto that I picked up around that price once you did the currency conversion. But even at $3, I could see this easily being a $6 or $7 card down the road. I don't think it easily regains the 15 it had before due to the total the overall increase in available copies. But I could easily see it hitting 5, 6, 7 in a slow, predictable pattern over the next 2 or 3 years and being a good card to trade out at that point.
Yeah, you brought up a good point. We talked about this briefly before we started recording, and I was kind of curious why this was here. But, I mean, this card was quite expensive before the Battle for Zendikar reprint, and there was zero constructed play going on with it at that point. So it makes a lot of sense that this, having dropped as cheap as it is, could quietly increase over the next months to get to a point where you're happy to sell out again, especially if you're getting in at you know, $2 a piece or whatever it is right now. So it's a quiet little pickup, but I think it is well considered.
Now, as opposed to all that jank, my next pick is a slam dunk modern format staple that is exhibiting movement I don't fully understand, and I think it's just a short-term irregularity that we should take advantage of. Court of Calling foils, I actually called this out several shows back, maybe 8 weeks ago, when they were readily available around $25. And this week, there are several copies up on TCG Player around $20. Keeping in mind that the regular copies that were also a call earlier on in earlier episodes of the show have moved from about $7 to $15 in the same time. So you've got regular copies almost doubling up into the mid-teens and some foils available on the market $5 below the $25 entry point that I called earlier with a target of $40 for the long term. Keep in mind that Court of Calling is probably one of the top three green cards in Modern right now, and that Court of Calling / Collected Company decks are probably one of the top three decks in the format right now. And, you know, Court of Calling was called as a pickup at $2 or $3 a couple years back when it was printed in M15, and very few people got on the bandwagon when they should have. But you still have this opportunity to get in on the foils. You know, there's not a lot around. There might be 10 or 12 copies, so whoever hears this first probably grabs them and moves on. But even back up at $25, where most of the copies are priced, there is relatively limited supply. There's only a single page available on TCG Player right now. There aren't that many copies left on eBay. This is a card that I expect to see strong movement and end up over $30 in foil by the end of the year, and I think $40 isn't too far off after that, as long as that deck keeps doing well in the format.
Yeah, I was really surprised to see this on the list because I looked and I'm like, wait, $20 for the foils? How is that possible? The non-foils is $10, and this is a very important modern card. And lo and behold, it's definitely right in that region. So I'm surprised to see it as cheap as it is, and I think that this is spot on. The original foils are in like the $50 range, so I don't think that $35, $40 for this is unreasonable whatsoever, especially because I think the non-foil is going to keep increasing too. I think the non-foil could hit 20.
Yeah, I mean, the non-foils are generally, there's a whole bunch of copies around 12, and then, you know, retail is somewhere around 15 in most stores right now. But yeah, I could easily see Court of Calling hitting 20 this year once the next 100 copies or so dry up on the internet, which only takes, 25 mm-hmm. new players to put it in as a four of in a deck.
Yeah, it's not difficult to get there. All right, did you have anything else you wanted to talk about in our segment this week?
Nope, that should be it for our buy calls. Let's talk about the metagame week in review.
Okay, segment three, we're looking at Grand Prix Toronto and Grand Prix Tokyo. What jumped out at you here?
So I was actually on site at GP Toronto. It was the first really big event in Toronto run by Face-to-Face Games in collaboration between their Toronto and Montreal shops, and they did an excellent job running the event. Most of the tech on the floor was outsider tech that didn't really make the top tables, but there was some attention paid to two decks in particular that were a little bit of a surprise. First of all, the trophy was taken home by Robert Lombardi on Esper Dragons, a deck that had been assumed to be kind of no longer a part of the metagame, despite the fact that it also top-8ed the Pro Tour, where it was also considered to be something of a surprise. And it just goes to show that the power of the Dragons, Silumgar and Ojutai, in combination with a strong control shell, is a potential solution in the right hands. And it leads me to wonder whether the deck would be doing better if more people hadn't already written it off.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point.
Of course, most of the rest of the top eight was filled with copies of green-white tokens, which was probably the expected winner coming into the tournament, and they did indeed put two copies in the top eight. There was also Michael Chang in seventh place running Naya tokens that was running four copies of Nisa and four copies of Oath of Nisa. Oath of Nisa is definitely on my watch list as a long-term pickup that has potential in Modern. Nisa herself seems underpriced to me at $15 given the volume of play she's seeing in multiple decks as a four of in Standard and the fact that she's a small set mythic. All of that makes me think that as long as some version of the Nisa deck survives into the fall, she probably tops $20 and ends up in the $20 to $25 range. She could just as easily fall off the wagon and move in the other direction. And depending on where your entry point was on her, that would probably be the deciding factor in whether you get off in the near future or wait for further games.
Yeah, yeah. What I thought was interesting was this Naya ramp deck that's showing up in Tokyo right now, which is running Ulinvolve Hydra, and then you can tutor for Mirror Pool to then copy the Hydra and get a second Hydra and then, you know, lead that into a Rogue's Passage or something. You know, Ulinvolve Hydra right now is like $2 on TCG Player, and like now I'm looking at this, I almost feel like this should have been one of my picks of the week. You know, this card is, it's not Primeval Titan, but there's a lot of room for a card to be worse than Primeval Titan and still be very good in Standard. It's a mythic, and it was in Shadows of Innistrad, so supply is on the higher side, but at the same time, it's got a while to go before it rotates. So, you know, at $1 or $2, this card could easily become 7 or 8 if this suddenly slams an event. So I definitely like keeping an eye on Ulinvolve Hydra going forward. And also because you can play this with the other card you talked about, Nahiri. I mean, it's a totally reasonable card to put in a Nahiri deck where you can, Nahiri can help you get into the Ulinvolve Hydra. As Ulinvolve Hydra helps you ramp into the other threats that Nahiri is going to tutor for, you know, use your ultimate to find. So it's, that's a curious card and a curious deck.
Yeah, I mean, again, we have a mythic being underappreciated and underrated when it was first revealed. People thought this was a poor man's Primeval Titan. It was kind of written off as being a bulk mythic. But it's been showing some slow, steady gains on Magic Online in the last week, moving from about 50 cents up to about $1.40. I mean, that's a triple up. So the fact that you've got this mythic slowly inching forward on Magic Online, and you've got the Japanese players fooling around with what is essentially brand new tech in the format. I mean, nobody else is doing anything like this. But what the power comes from the fact that they can use the Hydra to both search out these utility lands to kind of tip the balance of the game. But the keyword that's being missed on the Hydra is reach. The fact that she can, assumably you have about six lands when you play her, and she can block Avastin profitably is pretty big game right now. And the fact that a lot of the decks that you're facing are either mono white humans or they're green white tokens or they're a bunch of mid-range creature decks that are kind of like 3/2s and 2/3s, you know, a 5/5 or a 6/6 Hydra that searches out a utility land, copies itself, is going to set up a situation where it's going to be very hard to push through.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is the first day of the GP in Tokyo. We don't know how, you know, this deck is gonna play out. If it makes top eight, I would certainly be looking for an opportunity to get on $2 mythics that might potentially represent a brand new archetype that people will want to snap up and fool around with.
Yeah, and you know, even if this doesn't top eight, this is still definitely worth considering because of the raw power level and the way that the format could shift and suddenly make this relevant. So even if it doesn't do this weekend, that doesn't mean it's not going to do well. And Hydras are reasonably popular casual cards. So, you know, Mythic Hydras are not a terrible thing to have your hands on anyways.
Exactly. Now, the other deck that caught my eye this morning coming out of Tokyo was an update to the Seasons Pass deck that people may recall John Finkel made top eight with. People had kind of written the deck off after the tournament, despite the best player of all time taking it into the top eight of the Pro Tour, on the basis that the rest of his team didn't do that well with it. Their win percentage just wasn't all that impressive. But the Japanese, one of the major Japanese teams, picked up the deck and realized that a calculation to include blue as a third color might be the solution to make it more viable in the format. So the primary inclusion is multiple copies of Jace, Prince Prodigy, you know, probably the card, if not one of the top three cards of the last year of Standard, allowing them to dump additional cards into the graveyard via the loot ability, which then, you know, Jays allows you to flash back potentially, or sets up or even better Seasons Past when you've got more cards of varying cost and casting costs in the graveyard to abuse. It also let them, the blue splash also let them include copies of Dragonlord Silumgar, I believe, and Silumgar's command, which allows you to knock off planeswalkers, kill creatures, and is a very good kind of anti-mid-range collected company deck kind of bullet. So that was a pretty interesting deck, and I'd be curious to see if this keeps the momentum rolling for Seasons Past by making the top eight of the tournament.
I really like the answer. The second level of any deck is, well, add blue and Jace. Oh, are you playing humans? Add blue and Jace. Are you playing green-black Seasons Past control? Oh, add blue and play Jace.
And the part I love the most about that is that, again, a mythic that nobody thought was any good. Nothing gives me hope for the future of MTG Finance like the fact that every single set, multiple mythics and rares are undervalued, underappreciated, improperly reviewed, and untested while people are commenting on them. And nothing could possibly be better for making money on the cards.
Yeah, you would really think that we, as a community, might have kind of solved that, but we haven't. We very clearly have not. It's over and over and over again. So it's good for the game, and it's good for people like you and I.
The number one piece of advice I can give, and we're not doing our topic of the week this week because we don't have a super deep topic to run into, but let me leave you with this, folks. If you want to get ahead of the curve on the cards coming out in a new set, there's only one thing to do. Test. You need to mock up the cards when they're revealed, throw them into decks, and test the crap out of them. That's the only way you're going to end up ahead of the pundits. There are so many people that are commenting on cards, both pros and finance guys alike, that don't have any idea what they're talking about because they haven't tested deeply enough with the cards. So if you want to get that edge that gets you out ahead of the game and lets you pick up, you know, Thing in the Ice at $3 or Nahiri at $6, this is the situation.
Yeah, I agree that there are a lot of cards that are very easy to dismiss, and then the first time you cast it, you go, oh, I see. And, you know, I'm guilty of this myself, as I don't do a lot of that either, but I try not to, at the same time, too heavily dismiss anything that I haven't given a shot to. But, you know, it will involve Hydra. And the other thing is you have to really be willing to listen and learn from your mistakes. I thought Ulinvald Hydra was pretty bad when it was first revealed. But, you know, I listened to people who cast it and said they liked it. After some discussion, I'm like, you know what? I was wrong. This card's actually pretty powerful. And now I'm willing to think about it. So, you know, we're not doing a full segment, but that would be my quick little tip is even if you get a card wrong the first time, don't be afraid to admit that you were wrong and learn from your mistakes.
I mean, in some cases, it's going to be very, very difficult to get out in front because some cards are just good because the metagame demands that they be good. But they're, you know, some cards are their power is only revealed through testing. So test away. So there's just one more thing I wanted to point out. Cards that people should be looking to get out of right now. I would be moving out of all of the Dragon Lords from Dragons of Tarkir. All of them are seeing occasional play, but none of them are seeing dominant four of play, and they are only going to be heading downhill from here as we get towards the fall. These are cards that are going to be excellent long-term casual pickups when they hit their bottoms towards late summer, but definitely move out of those at the moment. It's also possible that Pyromancer's Goggles has peaked in his, and may not regain a top spot in the metagame. It certainly seems to be showing up in fewer and fewer numbers at top tables as the standard season progresses. And, again, will be a great pickup if it gets back under, you know, $3 or $4. But anything over 10, I think if you're holding a bunch of copies looking for future further gains, Nat, you might want to consider getting out to prevent further losses.
Yeah, I was really bummed when Pyromancer's Goggles did so well in Standard because I had so had that card on my radar as something to pick up later on, and it just hadn't quite gotten cheap enough, and then they went and spiked it in Standard and ruined all my plans. All right, James, that's a wrap for this week. Where can our loyal listeners find you?
You guys can find me on Twitter at MTGCritic, as well as via my weekly articles on MTGPrice.com.
Okay, and my name's Travis Allen again. You can find me on Twitter at WizardBumpin, B-U-M-P-I-N. I'm also write every Wednesday at MTG Price, and I show up occasionally on the webcast Cartel Aristocrats.
And I would like to remind our listeners to check out the MTGPrice.com Pro Trader service. For just $4.99 a month or $49.99 per year, you can get early access to this podcast, fantastic articles by the best MTG finance minds in the business, and a sweet set of online collection management and buy list tools that will drive better returns and save you money playing Magic the Gathering.
Okay, that brings us to the end of episode 16 on this gorgeous Saturday afternoon, and I really enjoyed being here with you today, James.
Thank you, Travis, and we'll see all of you next week on another episode of MTG Fast Finance.